Blog Talk Radio.
Shortly by the good Dr. Thomas Keister, and I believe we have Mike the Ref already on the line.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. How are you doing tonight?
I am doing fantastic. How about yourself?
Oh, you know, just being a Canadian is a great thing today.
Hey, what's that all about? We're going to join. Hopefully, Dave will be showing up here shortly. But we're going to – the whole show is going to be this, but I do want to cover a couple of things. Of course, remember our WrestleMania contest that is currently underway. You have nothing to lose and everything to gain by joining. All you have to do is send an email to radio@freeraymedia.com with your predictions on the big show of all the matches. The most accurate person gets 100 cool, crisp, clean dollars from us at Free Ray Media. But I do want to touch on one thing before we go into the four corner. Of course, this Monday night, WWE Raw is in me and the doctor's hometown of St. Louis, Missouri. And it's always a shame being where we live now. We're only a few hours away. But every time Raw's back home, we always get that, oh, man, you know, it's St. Louis. We could just run home and check it out. But thank God we didn't, because, of course, this Monday, Snooki from Jersey Shore will be at Monday Night Raw. And two things. One, did they not learn one thing from TNA, that Jersey Shore stars equal a ratings drop? I guess not. And two, one more reason why adults and most wrestling fans hate John Cena is he on the Twitter and wrote that he was very excited about Snooki coming to Raw, so now he can beat up a washed up reality star, The Miz, in front of a real one. See, Cena, this is why we continue to boo your ass. Plain and simple.
How many more reasons can we find?
It's endless. It's endless. We all know it. So, but let's go ahead and jump into it right now. Of course, I asked you gentlemen for a four-corner conversation this week. Great wrestling storylines. Obviously, the obvious ones, you know, Stone Cold, Vince McMahon, the NWO and WCW. Those are the obvious ones. Try to think outside the box on different ones. And I believe we're joined by Dave now.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Ooh, so we're just going to jump them out there. The Fatal 4-Way is now complete. Gentlemen, just throw them out there in any particular order. Just
you didn't tell me this was to the death.
Yes. No holds barred, brother. I'll throw out one that I knew when I was younger I enjoyed. It was never a huge storyline, and it was never one that was going to be probably on anybody else's list, and this was a WWF storyline, but I always enjoyed how they handled Rugged Ronnie Garvin and Greg the Hammer Valentine.
Oh, my.
Wow.
Remember that back in, like, 89, around SummerSlam, and, of course, Rugged Ronnie Garvin, he came up with his own knee brace called the Hammer Jammer. Remember that?
I had almost completely forgotten about it, but thanks for putting it back in my mind.
I always enjoyed that there was the other moment when I can't remember who it was. Greg Valentine, I believe, was wrestling Hercules, at SummerSlam 89, and Rugged Ronnie Garvin was the guest ring announcer. And he said he called him a man who wears a robe made of cheap rhinestone and has two left feet. I always remember those kind of – I always thought that was a really good, nice – it wasn't even a mid-card feud. It was like a lower mid-card feud, but yet it was entertaining. So, but I'll let you gentlemen throw yours out there. Well, go right ahead.
Well, I'll throw mine out first. Ted DiBiase attempts to buy the WWE title off of Hulk Hogan, or the WWF.
Ah. Yes, indeed.
Led into the inclusion of Andre, Earl Hebner, set up the entire tournament of WrestleMania 4 and took almost a full year to do it. So,
which I watched some of last night. Or as I like to call it, Count the Dead Guys Marathon. That's the way it goes sometimes.
That's going to be the new drinking game on WWE On Demand. Every time you see a dead guy main event, and you got to chug one.
You got to take a swig. My goodness.
I'm going to throw back actually to the old ECW. I'm a huge fan of most of their stories because they actually put their heart into the story. But the one that stands out, I think, in my mind anyway, was Sandman Dreamer. Dreamer caused the Sandman to go blind or some shit.
Okay,
alrighty.
The Sandman literally stayed home to sell that storyline for a good 3 months, would not even answer the door.
I was going to say, if I was going to go with somebody getting blinded, I'd go back to the old Chris Adams, Gino Hernandez, back in World Class. Yeah.
I remember some of that Sandman storyline, though, but I'm sure he had plenty of beer, so he was okay, I imagine. You know.
Oh, well, there you go.
I mean, how bad it could be? We're going to pay you to sit at home and do nothing but drink beer.
I mean, the fact of the matter was, he still managed to kayfabe it, even, like, away from the arena, you know? I mean, knocking the door, no, he's not answering. Fucking even when he goes out for the thing, he's got his eyes taped up, he's using the fucking cane, eh?
It's kind of reminiscent of the current storyline with Cody Rhodes and his broken nose. He's wearing the mask and everything, and it's hard to kayfabe a story like that.
The only thing I'll say is Dusty Rhodes should have at least hit Ray with an elbow when he pulled him. You know, when he pulled him back with that handshake, he should have the elbow.
And of course, you can't, if you're going to mention a blind storyline, no, you can't forget Rick Martel and Jake the Snake Roberts.
Oh, yes.
Eric.
Oh, yes, we can forget about it, actually. But.
I think Jake did.
Anything that results in a Prince of Darkness match.
Now, I'll throw one out there from WCW, which I was never a huge fan of the guy, Sting. But I always thought that the major feud that they always had, you know, the WCW NWO regardless, but Sting and Hogan, which to this day TNA still dabbles in that. But and I always thought the funniest quote I ever saw was 1997 taught us that a guy can hang out in the rafters for the entire year and get a title shot. You know, I mean, but it was their moneymaker. It was their big match main event at Starrcade, so it's hard. You gotta admit, it's hard for a company to take two guys and have them feud for a year without ever touching each other, and still gain and have the momentum for a big match at the end of the year.
Fair enough.
Not, you know, they pulled it off quite well.
Well, how about speaking of year long feuds? How about Hogan and Savage? How they were an awesome team up until SummerSlam, and then they fell apart in the Mega Powers at WrestleMania 5.
And you know, I was gonna mention that one because, in my opinion, it's even a bigger scope because if you think about it, it all started with Hogan and Andre, right before WrestleMania 3, and they were able to carry 3, 4, and 5 WrestleManias all kind of connected to each other in a continuous manner. You know, 3 was Hogan and Andre, then they injected Ted DiBiase and Savage into 4, and then it just boiled down to Hogan and Savage at 5. So it was kind of nice how
it was their Star Wars story arc.
It was. It really was how they stretched this storyline that just Hogan was a constant in the storyline, but it progressed from three different people over 3 years. Couldn't do that now. 3 weeks and the fans are going, we want something different.
No, 3 days and some idiot would have already leaked it on the internet. And
yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Some low that forehead ruins it for everybody else.
Well, how about Ted DiBiase and Virgil prior in 1991 leading to their WrestleMania match?
You're talking about the revolt of Virgil.
Yes.
Which Doctor, I forgot to tell you, of course, every year here in February, the Carl Casper Auto Show is in town.
Yes, indeed.
And from what I understand, Ted DiBiase and Virgil were together this year at the with the Million Dollar Belt. You know, very upset that I was not. Yeah, I was like, ah.
Well, Ted Jr. doesn't need anymore, so.
And it's funny because there's been a lot of mention of Ted DiBiase on the show tonight. Did anyone catch the sign in the crowd on Monday Night Raw that said, push DiBiase or we riot?
No, I didn't see that one.
Yeah, I saw it.
I was like, that's good stuff. Too bad it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
No.
Virgil has gotten a bigger push than Ted DiBiase Jr. And for those of you keeping track at home, that is not a good thing.
Very not so.
Ouch.
I'd rather be the warm-up back for a donkey show. You know what I'm saying?
We've got a couple in the chat room, a couple of suggestions. Slim RJS says, if Flair putting Dixie Carter in a figure four would get a massive crowd pop.
I'd put her in the figure 69.
Oh.
Just because it's impossible for her to talk with my cock jammed in her mouth.
And Slapnut says he liked most of Jericho's feuds in WCW. Jericho was that, in WCW, was that constant mid-carder that could entertain.
Okay, Greenberg.
He was always good, yeah, Benoit. He was always good on the microphone, and he could back up what he said with his wrestling. He is the best at what he does. So.
Even if he is on Dancing with the Stars.
Here's one that... Here's one that, in my opinion, was a great, and I say was because as quickly as it happened, it was over, unfortunately, because McMahon doesn't understand how to do these. The Nexus. The Nexus, it had a lot of potential. It was shocking. It was surprising. It wasn't a group of former main eventers. It wasn't a group of guys that were past their prime. It was a group of young guys that still had to earn their keep, and this, honestly... This was the only way some of them was going to get any airtime on WWE. And as soon as they became a powerhouse, McMahon started the instant struggles within, turn on the leader, you know, and he ruined it. I think now the whole Nexus core, it's you can't take it seriously. Cena destroyed every one of them at the fucking Royal Rumble.
Oh, yeah.
You know? So
and
it was a great idea and been pissed away.
And then what he's, you know, didn't accomplish there, Randy Orton's systematically doing every Monday Night Raw now.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of that, I want to go old school with a storyline here. Austin taking on the entire Hart Foundation leading up to WrestleMania.
Absolutely. That was how you balance a storyline like that. You know, Austin would get the upper hand, but at the same time, they would get the upper hand sometimes. It went back and forth. This whole Cena beats everybody shit. And that's why nobody can get into any of this Cena hype, because it's like, ooh, nobody's going to take him down. Even the streak with The Undertaker, you know, has moments where people are like, okay, he might lose this year. But you can't get into any of the hype of Cena losing anything anymore. They've just built him too unstoppable.
Yeah, because, I mean, and even if they do let him lose a match on TV, we've seen this before. We've seen it 100 freaking times. How many people do they try and give a push? We're gonna give you 73 wins in a row over John Cena on the number two show on all of cable TV. My most recent numbers, Jersey Shore actually beat them by 2 million viewers, but Raw actually had a 5.7 million viewers last week.
Because Stone Cold come out.
Well, no, that's this week. I mean, I'm talking about numbers from last week.
Oh, okay.
I don't have fresh numbers. But, you'll come out and they'll have whoever they're pushing just get victory after victory after victory over Cena. Leave him laying week after week after week. Gets to the pay-per-view, he throws one punch, and the rest of the match is all Cena. Either that or he beats John Cena's ass for 45 minutes. John Cena gets up, looks at him funny, does the FU, and that's the match.
Yep, pretty much.
Yep.
But
it's like Triple. He's like a lazy man's Triple H, because at least Triple H does four moves in a match.
Go ahead, gentlemen. Throw some more out there. I got one coming up here that you'll probably maybe you didn't think of.
What about the six sides of Triple H Shawn Michaels? How many different ways they twisted that one around?
Well, they did everything but have him do a gay wedding, so.
Don't make me
pretty
much tough music on here. Well, they did get a lot of, you know, nakedness back in the DX days, in the early DX days, so.
That's caused all the ass knee from the Roy 10 set in on some people who will remain nameless, but know damn well who I'm talking about.
Oh. Ooh. Dave, what are you? Mike, got a couple more for us. Go right ahead.
One of my big favorites was actually the Owen Hart stepping out of Bret's shadow, where they did that great big blow up and ran them for a little while.
Indeed.
Absolutely.
That was. You can't Easton split like that anymore. It's, oh, you screwed me, and now somebody's not doing anything anymore, and the other. Well, take a look at the last time a set of hearts split up. Where are either of them at this point?
I mean, there was a little bit of potential with Tyson Kidd. He brought in that new guy. That disappeared, and
well, the new guy walked out to the ring once and promptly got destroyed.
Yeah. I'm surprised they didn't feed him to Cena. Well, of course, they fed Tyson Kidd to Cena. I think what killed that was when Tyson Kidd was basically beat up by Hornswoggle at the Royal Rumble.
Yeah.
That's a career killer.
And now Tyson Kidd's resorting to be a pro on NXT. That's about equivalent to getting your walking papers.
That's like working the dark match on a Sunday Night Heat.
Oh! That is evil.
Well, I'll throw out an old school one. We got to go all the way back to 1987 for this one. Magnum T.A. and Nikita Koloff, the Best of Seven U.S. Championship Series.
Ah.
And then Koloff turning face after T.A. wrapped his Porsche around a telephone pole.
Yes.
Because 20 years earlier, they've been like, aliens came and got him, cannibals ate him, he said fuck it, and, you know, decided to live underground. But this was the first time they actually, you know, acknowledged real life shit that it had happened with somebody. Like, yeah, you know, he hit a Porsche like going up a million miles an hour, which is wrong. He was actually driving just fine. But anyway, he exploded himself all over a telephone pole. You know, they could have come up with 115 different ways to write that off.
See, back then we had legitimate stars in legitimate crashes. Now we have Nick Hogan.
Fuck, there's a crash for you.
Well, now we got Hulk Hogan doing his best Rent-A-Center shtick before crashing a semi into the Rock's ambulance. Remember that?
I don't know, the crash I'm waiting on is still Jeff Hardy.
I know, they just keep continuing that case.
When are we getting those tickets down to Florida, Dave?
That should be shortly after somebody puts a bullet in Snooki. I got money on riding. I got money riding on the fact that she doesn't leave the fucking arena on Monday.
Well, you know, and that's actually, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, that's terrible, but actually that's a safe bet. You know, St. Louis is the most dangerous city in the country again.
I'd like to see her get punted by Orton. That'd be...
I like to see her go to one of the St. Louis bars, one of the old school St. Louis bars, and pull that shit like she done on the show when that dude blasted her in the fucking face. go do that in St. Louis. They'll blast you in the face, but they'll have a bottle in the hand when they do it.
Yeah, but remember, Orton, if you do punt her, skank is really hard to get off wrestling boots. So
yeah, you have to hang those up.
Now, here's one maybe I didn't even think about it. Slapnuts threw it out in the chat room, and this was back in the days when WWE gave a shit about their tag team division, but the Edge and Christian, Hardys and Dudleys feud. That was some great shit. I mean, the TLC matches at back-to-back WrestleManias, those were some fantastic times for tag teams. Incredible matches. Absolutely incredible. And correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't Edge and Christian win both of them? Back-to-back.
I believe so.
Yep.
Yeah.
Probably.
Well, they're Canadians. What do you expect?
Here, here. Speaking of Canadian, I'll throw this one out for you guys. And keep in mind, of course, now it wouldn't work, but back then it was amazing how they put it together storyline wise. Hogan and Warrior. I thought how that came to be was. It was a great way, a lost art, if you will, of working your way to the top. Warrior coming in, working for a year or so, winning the Intercontinental title, going through his feuds and his challengers, and then, by chance, running into Hulk Hogan. I thought that was a great way to progress somebody to the top, to the number one spot, and they did an excellent job of that. And the match, as bad as Warrior and Hogan are in the ring, the match lived up to its hype.
Oh, certainly.
Absolutely.
It did something that they don't do anymore either, which also kind of irritates me, and they went face on face.
Agreed. It was a match that paid off, but Warrior just couldn't carry it. Couldn't carry the torch after that.
No.
His shortcomings was pretty much everything in his craziness. But here's one that I'm surprised the doctor hasn't thrown out there, or Mike and Dave. The Freebirds and the Von Erichs.
That wasn't a storyline. That was just Fritz getting his kids over.
But it was up until that point, the Von Erichs didn't have anybody really as a heel opponents. They didn't have anybody that really to feed off of, to work off of.
They had Skinner, Eckbar, and Devastation Incorporated. They had Gary Hart.
Yeah, but they didn't have anybody that really. The Freebirds were, you know, with Bad Street USA and everything. They really took the attention off the Von Erichs as far as, you know. I mean, anybody the Von Erichs were into the crowd didn't even see the opponent half the time. They just saw the Von Erichs wrestling. Here comes the Freebirds, which gave a legitimate challenge as far as attention and you know, I thought it was just great the way. I mean, the crowds were huge. They were alive. They were hot. I thought it was great how that.
And who would have thought out of all of them, Michael Hayes would have been the sole survivor?
Really? Yeah. Now he's a fat agent for WWE.
Nothing more depressing than seeing a fat man in his 60s try a moonwalk. It doesn't look good on a bad wedding video on the Smoking Gun. It looks even worse in a wrestling ring.
Okay, one that was a nice throwback to me anyway. I don't know about you guys. The ECW invasion, like the WWE ECW, prior to and including the first one-night stand. Honestly, though, that's where I cut that storyline, and nothing exists after that. Because it was all bullshit after that.
Amen, brother, amen.
Including that night.
Whoa.
The ECW, for once, the invading guys didn't look weak. It wasn't the top names getting jobbed out to the mid-card. The ECW fans got to enjoy Paul Lee and ECW take on and come out on top against Bischoff, the man that put him under. Honestly, to me, that was fantastic.
And well, there, and that also, the first one-night stand delivered one of the greatest lines in the business. From Paul Heyman, JBL. The only reason you're the champion on SmackDown is because Triple H don't want to work Tuesdays. Absolutely fantastic.
And some great matches out of that pay-per-view, too. I mean, Lance Storm versus Jericho, I'm a huge fan of both. And, of course, the legend,
absolutely.
Guerrero versus Benoit.
Yeah, you can't go wrong there. There was also that Mike Awesome and...
Anaka,
and that nasty powerbomb.
Oh, my God, somebody mentioned Mike Awesome.
I always enjoyed his work.
Let's see how the late Mike Awesome.
The late Mike Awesome.
He thrills the fat chicks
wanna,
in heaven now.
Oh, my goodness. I'm going to throw out one more, and then I have something else other to cover, but I only included this one because of the actual wrestling background between the two men, but it was nice to see Brock Lesnar and Kurt Angle.
Yes, very much.
It wasn't so much a great storyline as it was the fact that there was legitimate wrestling ability in the amateurs for both men. To see them come together and one-up each other was fantastic. And I want to cover one more thing, guys. Recently I bought the WrestleMania 27 book here. And at the very top it says, every WrestleMania, every match, every photo, every superstar. However, when you flip to WrestleMania 20...
Oh, don't get me. Don't say it.
Well, here's my problem with the WWE. Here's my problem. The bastard, they like to, you know, pretend he didn't exist. And for a while there, they were just saying that the match was between Shawn Michaels and Triple H. Then they decided to push that the main event was The Undertaker and Kane. In this book, now remember, the claim on the front, every match, every superstar. The book doesn't even list the match at all. They have completely erased both Shawn, Triple H, and Chris Benoit from the pay-per-view. It doesn't even mention the match.
Fucking bastards.
Now,
I'm sorry, folks. Here's my take on it. Hitler was real. He killed millions, but we don't deny that he wasn't real. He was real, folks. Why they do this shit just kills me.
It was real to me, damn it.
It's real.
Oh, wait. That was probably an inappropriate place to put that line.
Oh, well. It happens.
But I was just going to say, to make a point, though, Vince and Linda McMahon are conservative. Yeah. This is just how it works.
I know, but it's a shame. I'm not asking you
I mean, if there's anyone
the
that likes revisionist...
Her.
I mean, if there's anyone that likes revisionist history, it's a conservative.
It's Vince McMahon. I'm not asking you to celebrate the last weekend of the man's life, but for God's sakes, the man had some great achievements in the ring.
Damn straight.
And people had great achievements thanks to him.
Exactly.
I mean, I'll never forget the time he smashed Kevin Sullivan in the face with a paper towel thing from the men's room in Baltimore during the Clash of the Champions.
I'll close it out. We got about a minute left. I'll close it out tonight with the whole triple threat between Shawn, Triple H, and Chris Benoit was a great storyline.
Thank you. It was
a great storyline how Michaels said he had unfinished business, but Benoit jumping ship, showing up on Raw was a complete surprise, challenging Triple H. The match itself at Mania was the match. It tore the house down, and it's to this day, WWE be damned, by God.
It's like a Tracy Lords porn flick. I mean, there's only the one that you can buy. But you knew the other ones happened.
Yeah. Don't do
that. More for the Hall of Fame.
Here. All right, well, gentlemen, I want to appreciate it. We got less than a minute remaining. Fantastic. Of course, we'll do this again here in a few weeks with the 30-minute regulations from Blog Talk Radio. We'll spread them out a little bit, but like a whore's legs on prom night, we'll spread them out. But giggity.
Below
and,
the waist motorboating.
Next week we'll be back with an all new normal episode of Inside the Square Circle. We'll be talking about news, views, and reviews. So, Doctor, Dave, Mike, always a pleasure. Everybody that joined us in the chat room, we want to thank you for hanging out. And remember, our Fury Media WrestleMania 27 contest carries on. Send your predictions to radio@freereignmedia.com or get a hold of me on Facebook. I almost said MySpace, for God's sake. Get a hold of me on Facebook, for more information. So with that, this is the Daryl Mays reminding you all to let yourself be entertained. Don't read the spoilers, and I'll see you all right here next week for an all-new episode of Inside the Squared Circle.